Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 16th, 2015. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, two brewlosopher experiments that we did in person at the National Homebrewers Conference in San Diego. One having to do with lager fermentation temperature, and one on first wort hopping. We put the palates of some Basic Brewing Radio veterans to the test. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on the Google Plus as well. Well, thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how it works. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page. That'll take you back to Amazon, where you can shop to your heart's content. You won't notice any difference. It won't cost you any extra, but you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes or Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're in the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're in the Stitcher app as well. And if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. And I think I mentioned it last time at the end of the show, but you can still get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo on our site, so basicbrewingshop.com. So be sure to check that out. My family and I went down to my hometown of Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas, this past weekend, where I was able to visit Superior Bathhouse Brewing there in the national park. You heard Rose Schweikart on the show with John Palmer as a guest as well, talking about her water chemistry down there at the bathhouse because she uses water from the hot springs to brew beer. That was a fun show, so be sure to check that out in the archives if you haven't heard that. But it was the first time that I've met Rose in person, and I get to spend a couple of hours with her and Jim Powell, the co-brewer at Superior Bathhouse Brewing, and I was really happy to look around the brewery and get a behind-the-scenes look at, a historic structure in my hometown there that I'm glad is seeing new life. And they've got a really cool setup. It's some parts it's fairly basic, but they've got the temperature control on their fermenters, and they're really doing some really nice stuff. And I was very happy to try some of their beers, obviously. Their Caramel Citra IPA was very nice and hoppy, but it had an amber candy syrup added to it and all citras added every 5 minutes, Rose said. So that beer also had base malts of a half Touro and half Vienna. So very tasty. I got a growler of that to take home. And I also got a growler of their excellent rye saison, which was incredibly tasty. This saison was a beer that they brewed by starting the mash using the hot water just straight from the spring there at the temperature that it comes out of the ground, which is, I think, around 140 degrees Fahrenheit, using that as strike temperature, and then using decoctions to ramp up from that low mash rest temperature to higher mash rest temperatures. And several of you wrote in with suggestions on styles of beer or recipes to brew using that technique. And Wayne from South Windsor, Connecticut, suggested brewing a saison. So cheers, Wayne. You may have had some influence there. Rose said that she and Jim used a lot of rye in that saison. I think she said 25%. And I asked if the lower mash rest temperatures were able to make the wort less gummy with all that rye. And she said it did a bit, but next time they're going to use rice hulls because it was still pretty sticky. But whatever they did, that was a really good beer. And they used a White Labs Belgian Saison yeast, and it did a really nice job of the Saison flavors. And we went to the White Labs tasting room, you'll hear in a future episode, Did an interview with Chris White out there. And one of the flights that we tried out there was the Saison flight, and the White Labs Belgian Saison yeast was my favorite of that flight. By the way, my wife and sons were entertained while I was visiting with Rose and Jim in the back of the brewery there. My family had the gelato up front in the brewery and did a bit of geocaching and ingress hacking up and down Bathhouse Row there in the National Park. Lots of caches and portals in and around downtown Hot Springs if you're into that kind of thing. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. This comes from Mike up in Canada. Mike says, this past weekend I brewed a beer that I thought you might find interesting. I'm planning on entering a homebrew competition called the Iron Homebrewer, hosted by the Noble Hop Homebrew Shop in Toronto, Ontario. The concept of the competition is to brew the most interesting beer that you can using only 10 pounds of two-row and 3 ounces of Cascade pellets. No other ingredients are allowed except for the brewer's choice of yeast and or bacteria. I'm assuming water, but that anyway, Mike says, I was reading Homebrew Dad's article about his long boil beer. You'll have to Google that, Homebrew Dad, about his long boil beer, and it occurred to me that this technique might be a good way to differentiate my entry from the others, not only in flavor, but also in appearance. The long boil process darkens the wort along with adding rich toffee and dried fruit flavors. Anyway, Mike says, brew day went great. After 7 hours of boiling, I ended up with an amazing 1088 original gravity wort that you'd never think came from nothing but two-row. And he sent me a photo of, he says, you can see in the attached photo what a difference the long boil made. The first lighter sample is pre-boil, and the second is at the 3.5 hour mark, only halfway. I topped up the volume in the kettle continuously through the boil. So both of these samples have the same approximate specific gravity. Very interesting. I forgot to take a photo of a sample after the full 7 hours, but it was even more dramatic. Mike says, I pitched Y yeast 3655 to this beer, so it'll probably end up as something midway between a Belgian pale and a double, though with some late addition Cascade hopping that will take it outside of any existing style guidelines. Boo, shame. Mike says, happily for me, the contest that I'm entering isn't about style guidelines. Yay. So that isn't much of a concern. Mike says, I'd love to send you a sample when it's done fermenting, but I don't think I'll be able to since it would need to cross the Canada-U.S. border. Still, I thought you might be interested, even if you couldn't drink the finished product. Also, I went through a heck of a lot of propane through the 7-hour boil process, I bet. So I thought this might be a good use for your new electric homebrew setup. Very interesting, Mike. I've done longer boils for beers like Scottish ales to darken the wort and concentrate it to a higher gravity, but I haven't boiled for a long time and added water along the way to keep the gravity stable, which is an interesting concept, and that would be a fun technique to play with. Figuring out the hopping would be fun on that. You know, I guess you could save all the hops until the last hour or so, or, you know, do a bunch in the last 15 minutes or so to get a lot of hop flavor in there as well. And yes, Mike, that would use a lot of propane. So, for something like that where you're going to be boiling for 7 hours, you'd be better off with an electric brewing system like those from our sponsor, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. They have electric brew-in-a-bag systems like mine that you can customize yourself using tools at highgravitybrew.com. And now they have 3 versions of the electric brew-in-a-bag system to choose from. The 240-volt 10-gallon pump, or 10-gallon system with the pump, 120-volt 5-gallon system with the pump, and 120-volt 5-gallon system with no pump in the true spirit of brew-in-a-bag. And as I said, you can easily customize your electric system from High Gravity. You can use the tools there at highgravitybrew.com to customize your system. And while you're on the site for ingredients and many other products, High Gravity offers $7.99 flat rate shipping. That's highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's go on to the meat of the matter. We did several experiment episodes while we were in San Diego, and this one was with the Marshall Schott, the Brewlosopher. and a handful of Basic Brewing Radio veterans, as well as some folks that Marshall brought in. You know, you can read about these experiments at brewlosophy.com, but it's always fun to take part firsthand and to hear the tastings as they happen. We're at a room full of people, and I'll try to make this less chaotic, but Marshall Schott, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio in person.
Hey, thank you, James. Glad to be here in person.
And we have a cast of characters. Maybe we should just have everybody introduce themselves real quickly.
It's Steve Wilkes, and I'm glad to be anywhere at my age.
Doug Wyszynski.
Mike Gizzo.
Mike Tonsmeyer.
Andy Sparks.
Paul Hanlon.
Amy Hanlon.
Are you playing?
Sure. Aaron Collier.
All right. Have we got all the participants? Or are we?
Matt Human.
Malcolm Fraser.
Malcolm has been in the show before. And toxicologist Paul is it now? And you said your last name now, Paul. So
that's right.
There's no going back. And we just got back from seeing Paul's presentation on homebrew toxicology. And if you didn't go see that, you can find it when they post all the audio, and you should listen to that. It was an excellent presentation.
Yep.
So we are doing kind of a live version of what Steve and I usually do on the porch.
We do have a balcony, so we can simulate that.
Oh, yeah, we can go on the balcony. So what are we doing here?
We're going to do some experiments. We got two different experiments for you guys to run through. We started collecting data this morning, and so I think with the amount that we're going to gather after this crowd goes through it, we can actually look up the data and talk about it right away.
There
Yeah.
We'll have steaming fresh piles of data right here.
Rather than step in that.
So, as usual, we don't know anything about the beers that we are tasting. We just know that two of these things are the same and one is not the same, and we are to pick them out. We'll do, what, two triangle tests?
Two different triangle tests. I'm happy to tell you that the styles are Bohemian Pilsner for the first round and a Honey Helles Export for the second round.
And who brewed these beers?
Yours truly. And I apologize for that.
And, you know, we've had some... This is a crowd with some experience in drinking beer, mm-hmm. so we should have some interesting perspectives. Anything that we should know going into it?
Nothing at all. Okay. Just that if you're wrong, it means you're a terrible taster. No, it's the exact opposite of that. These are I like to remind people before they go into this that you're not going to know if you were right or wrong. You guys will, but we've redesigned the survey so that you have no idea. It's the same for everybody.
Okay.
We do an online survey that people use, and so if you happen to be in the wrong group, it doesn't mean that you have bad taste buds. It just means that the variable was probably not significant enough to cause a huge difference in distinguishability.
Right.
So, yeah.
And this, you know, Steve and I are tied at picking out the odd beer in the triangle test. So this, you know,
there may be
a little skin involved as far as our egos are concerned.
Well, yeah, of course.
Everybody loves a good hotel fight.
We haven't had one of those on the show yet. Okay, so shall we pause, do the first tasting, come back and talk about that, and then we'll move on from there?
Yeah,
sounds good. So, Marshall, we...
God, I'm glad you caught that now.
You know, if you push the record button and make sure the numbers are running, it works a lot better. So, how many people have we got in the room who just voted?
We got 12 people in the room, and I had 17 people before, 16, 17 people before, 24 total, so... That's 17 people. This is not making sense.
Yeah, 12 people before.
We're
this
good.
This is the man
running
the statistics.
Marshall's been drinking sour beers with Mike Tonsmeyer. So we got a bunch of people in this room who just took the test. How confident is everybody that they got it right? Is anybody confident? Okay. Sean, you're confident? Which one are you confident that you got you picked?
I picked blue as being the different one. I was pretty confident. It seemed a little softer, more round. The red and green were a little sharper, maybe just a touch more perceptively bitter. So I was pretty confident blue was the different one.
Okay, Aaron?
I was unconfident. I actually got it wrong, but I know I got it wrong because I did it a couple days ago. But, and I picked green. Well, I got it like half right, but I picked green for the same reasons that Sean said, but I thought they were on the other side of things. Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Matthew.
Yes, I took it earlier today, and I thought I picked green. I can't remember, but I thought I perceived it different, but based on Sean's interpretation, I may be wrong, but I'm not sure.
Steve.
I don't have a clue.
What did you say?
I said blue. Blue is different.
Blue. Okay. Yeah. Amy?
I said green, but hearing him talk about blue now, I'm not so sure. I was pretty confident.
What were your reasons?
It was just a little sharper. It had a little more flavor.
And toxicologist Paul?
And I picked red, so I'm clearly the one that's the odd man out here. But I thought
you're as odd as I am, because that's the one I picked.
Oh, good. I just thought there was a little more going on, like on something else in the flavor, but...
I thought there was a little more like corny, DMS-y kind of a thing going on with red, but I probably am wrong. Malcolm?
I knew the basis of the experiment and did not participate.
Mike Tonsmeyer.
I picked blue. I thought green and red were just a little bit hoppier, a little bit sharper, a little bit crisper. I didn't necessarily love one set or the other a lot more, but I thought that there was a subtle difference and may have been so subtle that it wasn't even there.
Andy?
Yeah, I think I picked blue. Now all of a sudden I'm kind of wondering if I actually picked blue, right? Cause,
Marshall's looking it up.
Yeah, so it'll turn out I probably picked green. Yeah, I thought it was a little, just a little crisper, but honestly I struggled. I went back and forth and tasted them multiple times, and I was looking to try to find something. And
you picked red.
Andy's with me.
Yeah.
Mike the hop guy.
You know, I'm pretty confident that I picked blue, and I'm like him now. I'm like thinking, did I pick green when you guys? I did pick blue. You know, I picked blue, but I honestly was at a loss for finding, you know, major difference in there from most of it.
Me too.
Doug.
I picked blue, and I thought it actually had some pleasant esters that the other two didn't. I felt like the flavor profile of the other two was, while sharper, also just a little bit flat.
And I have to say that I was the first one to take a sip, so the samples were the coldest. So that's my excuse.
So. Well, and I've done this three times by myself. I won't say what I picked, because they were different colors. My wife poured them for me, but I was wrong every time. So.
Oh, interesting. Now, what was the experiment?
So this experiment is the third. It's the third fermentation temperature experiment. The first one we did was the Schwartz beer with the WLP-029 yeast, which is a hybrid. And I got a lot of junk for that because people said it's so clean, you're not going to taste it anyway. So the second one, we did a fermentation temperature experiment on a mild ale using WLP-002, and it just nudged into significance. And so, naturally, I wanted to test the lager, a lager strain. And so on this one, we used WLP-800. One fermented at 50 degrees and the other fermented at 65. So a 15 degree difference.
And the answer is, the results?
The different beer was the green beer.
Wow. There's smug smiles of satisfaction. So how many got it right in this room?
In this room.
What?
I can tell you.
Two? We got two?
Who picked the green?
Wow.
Two people. Yeah.
Wow.
That's not significant. So, yeah.
You guys got lucky is the answer.
Oh. Hold on to that.
There's reason.
Well, and so I've got some ideas, just theories running through my head as to why they might taste as similar as they do, but I'm curious what other people think. Both batches were pitched with the same. I bought two vials of yeast with the same date on them and built up lager pitch rates in both of them, and that's where my right now the results are insignificant. They're not significant right now. So based on the 24 people who have taken it all together, it's an pretty equal spread. Mm. Yeah. I think actually only 8 people of the 24 have selected the right beer, the different beer. So.
Which is just exactly chance.
Yeah. Exactly. It's almost exactly chance. Yeah. which is confounding to me, because this is a lager yeast in a lager beer, and it wasn't any more estery than the other one.
Yeah, what was wrong with it was not estery at all. Yeah.
Which is what you'd expect.
Yeah. Literally pitched 50 and 65, pitched at?
Pitched at the same temp and fermented, yes. Yeah.
Which one's which?
So what do you think's going on, Mike Tonsmeyer?
I'm smelling the beers again now that I know. Wait, this is the green, and this is the blue.
So the green?
That's red.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is...
That's wait, green.
It should be red.
Then they're the same.
It should be red and blue. Red and blue.
The green one was the cool fermented, for what it's worth.
No, it's funny. My initial reaction was the green, and going back and forth and smelling them again, I felt like the blue one was the odd one out. So, I mean, obviously, if there are differences, they're so subtle that no sort of average beer drinker, I think, is going to pick them up.
Yeah.
I think it must be some combination of that. You know, you're building up that great pitch rate, which is going to keep ester formation down. You're chilling to 65 and holding it at 65. So this is cooler than someone just doing 65 degree room, which would, you know, probably get the beer up into the 70s. But it's really surprising. Yeah. I mean, people put such effort on that real, you know, cold fermentation for a lager. I've become a big advocate of, you know, chilling down to the pitching temperature rather than pitching warm, as some yeast labs recommend, and cooling it as fermentation goes, with a concern that a lot of esters are formed early in fermentation, and if you start fermentation cooler, actually letting it finish warmer has become a popular sort of idea. But yeah, it's surprising and fun.
Well, here's another thing. You did a diacetyl rest.
Oh, that was my next question.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, okay, that's good. So I do a lot of quick lager beers. I'll turn a lager beer around 3 to 4 weeks. So for this one, what I did is I let it sit at 50 and 65 for three whole weeks, because I didn't want anybody to, but, and then I let them ramp up just in case. Yeah. Just they were already at terminal gravity. They were there, but it's just part of my process.
And then that covers a lot of sins, because when you do the diacetyl rest afterwards, you do a lot of cleanup. So I think you can get away with more.
So if you do the 50 degree may have been more, had more off flavors.
Well, by doing a diacetyl rest, you press the yeast to clean up. So a lot of other things that may be residual, you clean up. And a lot of beginner brewers don't do that. So I'm saying where you start isn't as significant as long as you push the yeast to go through its full cycle.
Sure.
Well, and I to clarify, the diacetyl rest was me moving the 50 degree beer into the same chamber as the 65 degree beer and just letting it come up naturally. Yeah. So there was no, I didn't raise the 65 degree beer any warmer than 65.
Oh.
That stayed where it was. Yeah.
Okay. But I guess the one of the points was, I guess if you ferment lager yeast at a warmer temperature, you're expecting fruitier flavors.
Right.
And we're not necessarily statistically, nobody said one is fruitier than the other, right?
No.
So I said one was cornier than the other, but that's my sense of humor. So, interesting. I mean, so, you know, this is only one experiment, one beer, and repeatability is the whole key to the whole science thing.
Absolutely.
And this may not be the answer for every lager strain. That's the sort of the trick with a lot of these experiments.
Absolutely.
Is that this is a statement about this yeast in this beer at these temperatures.
Right. Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
It may be another lager yeast is a lot more temperature sensitive and maybe does produce more flavors. And it's also tricky because you've done some pitching rate things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's great looking at one variable, but you might not be able to stack those results. Just because lower pitching rate may not be a big deal at lager temperatures, and just because lager temperatures may not be significant, it may be that lager temperature plus pitching rate is significant.
Mm. 100% agree, and I think, you can't make a claim because of one data point. Just pitch, you know, lager yeast at 65 degrees and you'll be fine. But what you can do is, if you're the experimental type and you're willing to give it a shot, try it out. If you've got 830 on hand, or you want to ferment a beer with 833, and you don't have temp control below 65, give it a shot. I mean, it's just beer. And it doesn't mean, I'm not promising anything. No one here is making the claim that you're going to make the same lager beer that you would if you had fermented it at 50. But this was pretty shocking to me. I was expecting a fruit bomb. I mean, and so, but at the same time, you balance it with, this is just a single experiment, and there, you know, there's plenty more to come. Different lager yeast may throw off different esters and whatnot. So we got to keep that in mind as well.
And nobody said, but all the samples were nice beers. I mean, and I, you know,
it's, well, thank you.
They were well done. There were no defects that I could detect in any way, and I think I would just that. Well, no, in the Pilsner style, I like a little bit of DMS. I like a little corniness in the style, and that's according to the style guidelines, it's acceptable. Yeah. So, I would have had a pint or three of any of them. So,
good, thank you.
Yeah, well done. It's always a good. It's always a relief when when I don't have to say, there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
Different infections.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is more pediococcus.
None of these beers are the same. Yeah.
This tastes like a foot, and this one tastes like a drain. Okay, anything else from anybody in the gallery on conclusions or expectations or...
I've concluded that I'm soundly wrong, and I have no business brewing. I need to give up the religion and go home from the conference early. Like, my worldview is shattered.
Well, one conclusion is that Steve and I are still tied.
Oh, yes.
There's one more to go.
Round two.
Round two. Ding, ding. All right. Numbers are rolling this time. Okay. So, Marshall, what was the experiment this time?
This was a first-wort hop experiment. So I've been curious about the difference between a first-wort hop and a 60-minute hop for a long time. I've been meaning to get to this one for a while, and so I finally did it. And you hear a lot about how if you do a first-wort hop addition, that somehow the aroma gets... there's more aroma in those beers, or the hop aroma... comes through, does something special, yeah.
Magic
happens, and that I've heard both sides, that the bitterness is smoother. I've heard that the bitterness is more sharp, and so I was just curious. When compared to a standard 60-minute bittering edition, so.
Well, I'm going to step out there and say that I picked red as being different.
All right.
So I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I thought that the bitterness was a little softer on red. So that's me. Sean.
Yeah, I picked blue again as being different. I'm not going to say I was confident. Last time I said I was confident, so I'm not going to make that mistake again. But I did pick blue as being different. I thought it had a little sharper hop character, so I don't know if that would be resulting from the first wort hopping or not, but I thought the hop aroma was a little bit stronger, a little bit more noticeable, so I went with blue.
All right, Matthew.
I selected blue as well, and before I thought I was wrong, and I was correct, so this time I feel actually kind of confident. So I'm basically the antithesis to Sean. Anyways, I thought actually there was enough difference, actually visually, for some reason. Maybe the oils from first wort kind of dissolved. Anyways, I felt blue was the difference.
Aaron.
I chose blue as well. I was actually pretty confident in that choice because I got an initial aroma on blue that I didn't get in the others. I was actually surprised this was a hop experiment because the aroma was significantly different enough in blue that that's not what I was getting in the other beers. So I was pretty confident in that, and that's why I chose it.
I'm getting less confident on mine all the time. Paul?
I'll help you out, James. So I also picked red. So I thought red was actually a little fruitier than the other two, but maybe I was just putting things in my head from the last one where it was all about lager fermentation. But we'll see. Hopefully Amy. We're right.
I picked green, so we'll see how that goes for me.
Oh, well, you were right last time. So, and why?
The red and the blue just, I thought, had almost a more... fruity or buttery flavor. The green was more, not more bitter. I don't mean that in a bad way, just different.
Yeah, bitter's not bad, at least among this crowd. Andy.
Yeah, unlike the last time, I'm very confident that I know which color I picked this time. It was right. So I also picked blue. I thought it was a hint fruitier, but they were a push, really, to me.
Yeah, they were all very close to me. Steve. Yeah.
Green. I went with green, and for kind of the same reasons that Amy cited, I just I thought it was a little cleaner somehow, and I it was just different.
Mike.
Yeah, I picked blue. I thought that the green and the red both had more of that honey malt aroma, a lot more of that sort of toasty kind of thing. I don't think I said that blue was any hoppier, but I think it maybe that is helping to balance out, if that is in fact the experimental one, the maltiness.
And Malcolm, did you participate this time?
I did. I didn't know that the basis of this one. I picked blue, and I don't know why. It just tasted different. I can't say it was bitter or softer. It just tasted different.
Okay. And
so that sounds like some sort of consensus, kind of.
So I'm looking at the data right now.
Paul, you and me. Is it just you and me, Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We had two reds, two greens, and everybody else. Block,
yeah. Block me from the balcony. just high enough.
Unless you got it right, we all got it wrong.
So. Yeah, exactly.
There's a pool down there.
So I, before revealing it, I'll tell you that of the 23 people who have taken this one, 9 have selected blue, and the required number for significance at a P level of 0.05, when my internet starts working, is 13. It's the same as last time. So, 13 people would have to say that the blue
was the winner?
I'm saying if it were significant, that blue was different to be significant, which we're approaching. In this room alone, it was significant, right? Yeah. Blue was definitely the different one.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. You guys are
blue was different.
Blue and
good job, guys.
Yeah, nice. Wait, the important one, Steve. What did you pick?
Green.
No.
We're still tied.
Are either of you better than luck at this point?
Oh, we need a statistician to.
Yeah.
Oh, and Doug and Mike the Hop guy stepped out. So.
Anybody want to?
We didn't force them out for any reason.
Anybody want to guess which one was first wort hop and which one was 60?
I'll guess. Blue. I'll put it out there. I think the other two are first wort.
Okay. I guess the opposite.
See, the blue was first wort?
I think blue was first wort
hop. Blue was first wort.
I've never been a big believer in first wort hopping.
Yeah.
But then I don't do a lot of subtle beers.
When you throw a bunch of bugs on a first wort.
But also if you're doing an IPA, I've never felt that first wort hop is going to be significant if you're throwing in 6 ounces of dry hopping. Yeah. And it's something with a beer like this where that's the only hop addition, right. Or you're maybe just a little, maybe there's something there.
Yeah. Is there did anybody think that the difference was significant or was just really?
It was very noticeable.
Really?
It was very noticeable right away in the aroma. I think this was the one. This was one where I almost said what it was before tasting the other beer. The third beer, because the two, so I had to go back to the third beer and make sure which of the two I was on.
Yeah.
But it was very right up front. Yeah.
Of course. Now the ones who know they were right are saying that. Of course, I was very confident. Right. Yeah. No, but
The blue one was the first wort hop. Was the first wort hop beer. So you guys are all right. Yeah. And to toot my own horn, I got this one right 3 times in a row. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. But that's knowing the variable, which I think does have an impact. Yeah. You know, when you know what to look for. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so then the question I want to ask is first wort hopping a good thing, or is it just a different thing?
Nope.
So.
I apologize.
I don't think I can answer that, but I've been like Mike. My thing is I've never noticed a difference, and what I appreciate about first wort hopping has nothing to do with the aromatic stuff or the bittering quality. It has to do with the fact that when a boil is reached, there's no nucleation points from dumping in a 60-minute hop addition to create a bunch of foam, it's way easier. If I'm gonna do a 90-minute boil, I just don't throw in first wort hops. But almost all 60-minute boils nowadays, I do a first wort hop for ease. But yeah.
So
that's my response. Yeah.
So
one thing I noticed, and I don't know if it's related to how it was poured or whatever, but there was a clarity difference for me and head retention difference for me.
And we're in paper cups where we're not supposed to.
I'll grab some glasses. You guys,
I know, but when they were presented to me, there was a visual difference.
Yeah, we should say that we're using
chance. Yeah, the reused glasses. One may have been rinsed out, which would have sort of.
And that's what I'm saying. But honestly, it worked out that way.
So. Yeah, we're using.
Thanks for playing.
We're using paper cups,
To help obscure the visual, because that's not the goal of this experiment.
Yeah, because the because it was an appearance that we were looking for. It was okay, and people are looking at the samples. Photographs are being taken of the samples.
Is he losing head retention a little faster?
Oh yeah,
on my right. I'm sorry.
And that's 60 minute.
Yeah.
So, the first word hopping appear. If this is significant, the first word hopping. And those are dirty glasses.
What
would
say? But are they beer clean?
They're beer clean. Oh, my God. So, I mean, looking at those samples, the first wort hopping sample has better head retention, right?
Yeah, significantly, actually.
Yeah. And lacing one, the other one doesn't.
Well, and to go with Matt, I think if you...
Yeah.
The first wort hop is a little hazier than the, than the other
this
one.
Even from this angle, I can tell.
Yeah.
I can't see Andy.
For the first time, Matt, you were right about something.
For the first time? I'm frozen for the last part.
You were just angling for a brawl.
Yeah. And for the next experiment, which beer gets you riled up enough for a hotel fight? It would be PBR versus Miller Lite versus Dark Lord.
Yeah,
go with Pearl.
Oh yeah.
You know what you get when you take the pee out of Pearl? An empty can.
Oh.
Okay. That's an old joke. All right. So, between the two experiments, the second one appears to be more significant?
It does. If we were to go based just on the data we got from the guys in this room, it would be significant pretty solidly. But based on what we've collected so far, the 23 altogether, it's not. It's just like the other one. It's pretty evenly split. Yeah, 8 of 23 people at this point. We'll continue collecting data for NHC, but yeah.
Cool. And this may be an off the record question, but have you done any tracking of your different tasters? And are there some people who tend to be, you know, right more often than others to a significant level?
I've fought for that.
No, I did it.
Trying to get me. Cut right out of this.
We'll keep James and Steve out of this one. But, no, I because Malcolm was bringing it up a while back. Yeah. I went and I did. I compiled the data, and it's remarkable how the folks who do it the most often are these three and probably four other guys from Fresno, right?
Yeah.
And they're all BJCP provisional judges. We're just waiting for our scores to come back. It's remarkable how incredibly random it is. There really is no, because I think the variable speaks louder than the person's palate. You know, if it's such a subtle variable like first wort hop versus 60 minute hop, I mean, good luck. You know, and then so.
It's funny to listen to you guys get so competitive about it because we do it so much that it's competitive.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you go on streak. So like there was a streak where I got like 8 in a row and I was like, dude, I'm getting them all. And he's like, it doesn't matter.
I told you. That's what I tell these guys. Yeah.
We all get just so competitive about it. Oh, I got it.
I still like that, the confident question, because sometimes I'm like, no, but sometimes I'm like, yes, this has to be it.
And like I say, you know, for Steve and me, just throw us a bone.
I will.
You know.
Blue beer versus red beer.
Which one has garlic?
exactly. Yeah,
you
garlic and
temperature. Yeah. When you're 90 degrees, 30 degrees.
Which one's frozen?
Which one's frozen?
I like that.
Is it solid?
Well, this one doesn't pour nearly as easy as the other.
Terrible head retention. Celebrity Jeopardy on NSA Live.
Well, this has been fun again, and challenging, and you know, we get less confident, I think, every time we do one of these things, Steve. But
well, that's okay.
And now Andy's in the mix, so
never to leave.
So, all right. Well,
yeah.
Any parting words of wisdom? No wisdom in this room.
Nice work, those of you who got it right.
Yes, exactly.
It means nothing. So
you're simply
you
a data correct. Point.
That's exactly. You're a number in my world.
Good job on possibly being significant.
Yeah, and you guys, I'll buy you a beer at the hospitality suite.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Thanks.
Well, thanks again to Marshall and everybody who took part in the experiments. Be sure to check out Marshall's blog at brewlosophy.com. And if you haven't heard the Basic Brewing Radio episodes from this past year in the archives with David Curtis, took a look at first wort hopping along with mash hopping and some more traditional hopping, take a look, listen to those in the archives. Dave got some IBU data from the labs at Bell's in Kalamazoo, where he works, to go along with our sensory perception. So it'd be interesting to listen to this episode and then go back to listen to those episodes from this past year and, you know, make some conclusions that way. And, by the way, we saw David this year in San Diego pouring beers for Bell's or Bell's for beers. Lots of stuff, more stuff coming up from San Diego in future episodes. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any of our DVD combos on there now. And also you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see listening to the fine folks across the country sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online or online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that are purchased through the link are Idaho, no, Utaho, funny joke gag party t-shirt. I have my suspicions on who ordered that. And Aramax Baby DB5 HEPA air purifier for the baby room with odor-reducing four-stage purification. Just set that over there by the diaper genie. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all. Until next time, until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.